Hello and welcome to the NHRA Insider Podcast powered by Speedmaster.
At the eighth mile, she's leading Bo Butner at the finish line stripe. It's Cameron Caruso for the first time. 6.592.
On this episode, it's Tony Pedregon and Kevin McKenna of National Dragster talking early season interest and what's coming in Phoenix.
And there goes Gage Herrera. Vinny, Vidi, Vici. He came, he saw, he conquered.
We were racing three quarters in, and what have we learned so far?
Chad Green's out first by a bunch. They get to the finish line stripe, and it's Chad Green! 391.6 on a whole shot, a 33 life.
This is the NHRA Insider.
Into the night they go, and the wind light comes on for Doug Collada! 367.3, 334 miles an hour.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the NHRA Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Loans, and we have a fun show on tap for you today as we take a look ahead to Phoenix, which will be a weekend of cleaning up Pomona. We have to finish that race, and we have great storylines coming into the desert. Of course, our return to Firebird Motorsports Park, a big moment that will certainly carry some weight. The third race of the season, which technically will finish the second race, and we'll move through the third. It is going to be great. I have Kevin McKenna from National Dragster, the senior editor of that magazine, coming on, along with Tony Pedregon, my right-hand man in the NHRA on Fox broadcast of this season. And we're going to go through a bunch of topics, kind of talk about what we have learned so far over the course of what has been 1.75-ish races of this 2024 Mission Foods NHRA Drag Racing Series. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Speedmaster, the powered by sponsor of the NHRA Insider Podcast. If you're a hot rodder, if you have a project going on, Speedmaster is the place to check for your parts. You can find their parts at all the major online speed shops, whether that's Jegs, whether that's Summit, whether that's the big distributor that you like to use by you, as well as great distribution in speed shops. And you can check them out at speedmaster79.com. Pistons, connecting rods, blocks, cylinder heads, top end kits, a lot of great parts and pieces, and they span the brands. If you're building something that isn't the traditional Ford or Chevrolet, they likely have something for you. Mopar, Buick, Olds, Pontiac, all covered in the world of Speedmaster. So please give them a look when you're looking for project parts for your car or truck. You know, one of the things I feel like we are going to talk about a little bit with Kevin and Tony, but one of the things I wanted to talk about more in depth before I have them on is something that we've been watching specifically in Pomona. And I'm not singling this team out for negative reasons. I'm not going hard on anybody here, but I want to use this as an example of where our sport can find its next level of depth, where our sport can find things that we currently do not show people that happen on a weekly basis that are important, that show and illustrate how difficult it is to succeed in whatever class you're in drag racing, but specifically in the top fuel level. And the team I want to talk about is, you know, Clay Milliken, the Parts Plus car, Arrowhead on the car this year as well. The Rick Ware Racing Camp is where that car is based. And we know that they have a problem that they are trying to track down. They had a lot of mechanical damage in Pomona, California, as we know. The car is running hard, and then it is failing in spectacular fashion. And so, you know, one of the things, and again, I bring this up not to harp on the negative, but it brings us into an arena of discussion here that I think we should have as a sport and understand a little bit better. So typically, in these situations, what professional race teams do, what this team will do, is they will probably strip the car bare, probably do every bit of analysis they possibly can, replace anything that may be causing this issue, which to our understanding, at least in our broadcast, goes back to what is a potential ignition problem, was the initial thought that the team was having at Pomona. Now they will, again, explore every possible option to repair this thing. And they will, because that's what pro race teams do. What the typical process has been here, and I hope this is the way it works for Clay and his team on this level, is they come into Phoenix and the car is very fast and doesn't break anything. And then we all move on with our lives. But there's a space in the middle there that we have historically left a massive gaping hole in. And that is via our coverage of the sport, via our explanations of the sport, via our explorations of the sport. And it cheats us out of a process that is fascinating, and that, to my knowledge, we've never had any in-depth look at. And so part of this is because, as I've said many times in the show and will continue to say, you know, our precious few minutes that we have on television on a weekly basis are fantastic for highlighting what is happening in the moment. They are fantastic for highlighting what is happening in game. And much like every other sports franchise out there, the stuff that happens off the playing field, the stuff that happens in the clubhouse, in the locker room, in the dressing room, pick your sport, is where the fascination is, and it's where problems get solved. So, in reality, I mean this to the bottom of my heart. I hope they roll into Phoenix. I hope the car goes down the racetrack. We're going to have great weather. Hopefully they're banging out 360s and they're in there slugging away with everybody in top fuel. And we will likely ask what happened. They'll say, we found it, we fixed it, we moved on. And I don't fault them for it because that's just the way it's always gone. But we need to look at this process a little bit differently here, because the fascination is not simply identifying a mechanical problem. That is what good mechanics do. That is what good crew chiefs and car chiefs do. That is their assigned task, to determine the problem, fix the problem, and move on. Could be a bad batch of parts. We've seen it happen before, whether it's, I'm not, again, throwing aspersions at anybody. Could it be some hard parts they have in that engine that are a bad batch? It is not the first time, nor will it be the last time something like this has happened. When you order things in batches, whether it is hot dogs or connecting rods, they come off a production line, or in this case, CNC machines, whatever it may be. And if there is a flaw in the base material of those products, you have a big problem. Again, I'm not saying that is the problem. I'm simply giving an explanation or an example of what we've seen in the past in terms of a bad batch of parts, so to speak. So, could it be that? Who knows? It could be that, and it could be this ignition problem that Jimmo talked about. Maybe that's more likely the kind of electronic ghost in the machine. But the process of fixing this goes far beyond simply just tearing a bunch of parts out and repairing the car. There is a human element to this process that I really, really, really wish we could show, whether that's the team, whether that's whatever. And I don't mean in this moment, I mean going forward. I think this is an opportunity for us to understand a little bit better. But, you know, you make this little flow chart, right? And so you make your little crew chief flow chart: problem, identify problem, fix problem, move on, right? If yes, then you do this. It's a very linear process. But that really isn't the real story. There is a coaching element to this. There is an investigative element to this. There is a discovery, an education, and a kind of improvement element to this. So that's where the fascination is. You know, for a crew chief, he has to start eliminating variables, you know, and that means looking at what your people are doing, how they're doing it. Is everything being done correctly on the car? Do we identify a problem in a process that we didn't necessarily know was happening? That's presenting itself as one thing, but it could be another. What that requires is a great team dialogue. It requires a great team ethic, and it requires great team leadership. All these teams have it. We never see it. And again, that is what we're so lacking in our ability to expand, in my opinion, this sport. And it doesn't, again, I'm not impugning our own television broadcast. I think we kill it every week. We do the best we possibly can with the windows and times we're given. We take you as in-depth as we can in the moment. But outside of that moment, when the cameras shut off, when the trucks go down the road, and when Jimmo, Nicky Bonifani, any crew chief gets on an airplane and they get the wheels turning in their head, how do we break this down? How do we eliminate variables? How do we solve the problem? And it always goes back to people. It always goes back to people. And what are the most compelling elements of our sport? Yes, in fact, they are the people. So, you know, to me, anytime we can, going forward, and by any means necessary, kind of break the mold of, we fixed it, it's good, we're back on track again, and be able to somehow break down, hey, listen, we got everybody together. We went through these 9, you know, items on my checklist. We verified everything that was happening on an assembly, human element side of what was going on. Then we investigated this. Then we determined this. Then we get everybody back together and go back through things again. And people who are being, you know, led and coached and, led is the best word. You get them around a table, and good leadership is not leadership that everybody's afraid to open their mouth. And these teams, by and large, the ones that are successful, have the style of leadership that the crew people are not afraid to open their mouth. They're not afraid to say something. And that doesn't mean ratting out your buddy. That means, you know, explaining your process in a way that is honest, that can help this whole team get to the root of the problem. So, you know, I'm fascinated when these problems are solved, and it's not, again, because, oh, we find out that one of the Magnetos was bad. We find out there was a problem with the controller somehow. We find out that something was going on outside of our human control that was literally short-circuiting in the car and causing these massive eruptions at the top end. That's all well and good. That is the linear tale of the story. But how did you get there? And, you know, the depth of getting there, the idea that this is a team, that this is a coached-led operation, I think is huge. So, you know, I'm not trying to make too big a deal out of this, but I feel like it's a message I would like to shoot into the heavens for every fan and every team and everybody involved in drag racing, that, like, the more you can explain stuff and the more we can stop hiding behind the quick, simple explanations, the better. And that doesn't mean giving away the company store. You know, that doesn't mean, that doesn't mean throwing people under the bus. That doesn't mean any of that. It can all be done with tact and that whole deal. There are teams that are doing very interesting things out there with either their chassis or their engine combination that we catch wind of. And on occasion, we'll ask them specifics and they don't want to tell us. And I respect that. This is auto racing. Your job is not to tell me everything you're doing so then I can report it to the world and you can lose an advantage you're working on. But at the same time, I feel like these type of things, these type of situations, and when they get solved, help to really reinforce the idea of what's happening away from the playing field, about the fact that it is not simply shove the car in the back of the trailer and pray it runs right at the next race, about the fact that this is a group of people who sweat and bleed over this race car and travel with it, and sometimes they love it and sometimes they hate it, but at the end, they all need to come together to make it the best thing it can be. That is a hard process, especially when you're in the midst of problems like these guys are having. That's a tough process, and it does test, as it would anywhere. It would test everybody on that team's mettle. It would test leadership. It would test everything. And this is not limited to one team. This is every single team in the pits. It really is. So I would love more depth in that area of our sport. I would love more depth in the understanding and knowledge of what's the process. What is the process? And that's why, look, that's why we talk about the series that are very successful in racing. I spend very little time, like the what we call shoulder programming. Those series that are about racing but are not about what's happening on the track, that's why these series draw huge numbers. And we will not be excluded from that group for a whole lot longer. Stay tuned on that. So everybody says, we need one of those. Well, keep your eyes open because just do that. I can't say anywhere. I'll get in trouble. So that's that. That is my rant on that. Not even a rant. It's just, to me, one of the things that I always look at this sport, I always think about, what is that thing? What is that catch that's a ladder? Like, what is the next rung on the ladder? And to me, the next rung on the ladder is more definitive access, more definitive view of the inner workings of these organizations. Like, you know, there's a reason why people know who Jerry Jones is. There's a reason why people know who Robert Kraft is, who these owners are. And in our case, a lot of the owners are also drivers. But the owners are also personalities in their own right. And the more we understand and learn about those things, the more interesting all of this becomes. So let's end it there. Hopefully you agree. Maybe you disagree. If you disagree, I'm all for it. You could be loans@nhra.com. Feel free to bang away on an email and tell me I'm a dummy that nobody wants to know about this stuff. But I know I do. And I'm not saying that means everybody does, but I am saying that as a guy who does what I do for a living and has now spent more than half of my life around here in the sport, not with NHRA, but in general, those are the things that I always crave to know a little bit more about. We'll see. So when we come back here in the NHRA Insider powered by Speedmaster, I will be joined by both Tony Pedregon and Kevin McKenna. We'll take a look back over the first 1.75 races of the 2024 NHRA Mission Foods Drag Racing Series to find out what we've learned so far, what we know, what we don't know, and what we should be paying attention to in Phoenix, Arizona. Don't go anywhere. All right, we are back here with the NHRA Insider podcast. I brought the Super Friends Network back together, Tony Pedregon and Kevin McKenna. Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's good to be back racing, even though we've had a little bit of a rocky start with the weather, but so far so good.
Tony, how about you?
Doing good. Looking forward to Phoenix. The weather's kind of cleared up here in Indy. We're hoping that it's a good event on Monday when we get back from Phoenix for the eclipse. We're going to have the Red IRP is going to have a function along with the Hendricks County and town of Brownsburg, and hopefully we have clear weather. So it's a good event to see the blackout in the afternoon.
That's pretty cool. That'll be one thing to And again, like you said, Monday, we all want to be home on Monday. We've not exactly made that an easy thing the first couple of races. Kevin, I fall into this trap sometimes. I want to know if you fell into it before Pomona. If we look at the forecast, and yeah, there was this little chance of rain, but we keep looking at those temperatures, and I just thought to myself, this could be one of the most epic races of all time. And I guess in its own way it was, but it certainly didn't play out the way any of us thought.
Yeah, and it's almost deceptive. There's times when, as you said, you look at the forecast and you think we're going to see numbers you won't believe a year from now.
Yeah.
And then for whatever reason, either the track's not there or the weather doesn't pan out in that. But, again, at this point, I'll just settle for dry. You know, right. Give me dry and sunny. I'm not overly concerned what the temperature is.
You know, Tony, obviously the track in Phoenix different than Pomona in that it gets more traffic. They've been racing on it really since February when they started their Lucas Oil Drag Racing Series season. So, you know, in my mind, if we start the discussion here, I don't suspect we're going to be dealing with any of the issues we saw in early qualifying in Pomona, but tell me why I'm right or tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, let's go back in the history of Phoenix. Their track records, national records have been set. And again, the weather conditions for the most part are going to dictate how these cars perform. If it's dry leading up to the race, there's no rain, there's not going to be an issue with water getting under the rubber, any jury having to go in and do two or three times the amount of work, like was the case. And I'll just go back before we go forward. The one really big takeaway that I had from Pomona was, of course, the Friday session.
Yeah.
Only two qualifying sessions. That's always two sessions for the pro teams. That's always going to present a challenge. But at what stage, and I admit, you and I were up in the booth. We weren't calling anything. We were just watching. I drank the Kool-Aid. We looked at each other and said, wow, this is a bad session. And, you know, I have time. I go talk to some of the tuners, some of the crew chiefs. Some of them are friends. Some of them are just have the courtesy to communicate what they did, what they were doing. I drank the Kool-Aid. I walked away thinking the track was bad. Of course it was bad. It's Pomona. It's the first run. When it took place on Thursday, you can bank on that track not being great. They have the what they call the keg. They have the gripometer. They have these 50 track specialists walking on the track. At what point are the crew chiefs and the tuners going to take more responsibility? And what they do is they pass that information along to the driver. The driver doesn't want to go against what their crew chief is saying.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's a bad look, guys. The drivers are puppets. They're spitting out the same thing, that the track is horrible. Yes, it's not always going to be great. At what stage, at what point are they just going to say, look, we didn't make the right adjustments? I've said this before. Some of them do. The smarter ones have no problem saying that. The egos do not get in the way. But the majority of them, I got to tell you guys, it sounds bad. It's a bad look to constantly blame it on the NHRA. Look, the track wasn't prepped to the standards that we'd all like to see. We all want to see mid to low 380 runs in funny car.
Sure.
I want to see 363 or 364 in top fuel. But if it's not there, the smart ones are going to say, look, this isn't a 365 track right now. This might be a 375 or a 378 track at best. These cars can do that all day long.
Yeah.
But yet they continue just to spit out the same thing. And with all due respect, I know it's a challenge, but you know, we've seen this before. I always go back to when Antonelli with the Caps car, I forget what race it was, but it was hot. It might have been Bristol, and they just ran 4:15 all day.
Yeah.
And just where they were at the end of Sunday.
Right.
In a winner's circle. So that's my biggest takeaway. I don't think that's going to be the case at Phoenix. It doesn't look like. I mean, there was rain yesterday, but I think there's going to be ample time for them to prep the track. I think the expectations should be a lot better. At least there's no rain in the forecast, and it's going to be cool. That means these cars should be able to go quick and fast. We should see what we expected to see in Pomona and Phoenix.
Yeah, and look, and to put a cap on your point, Tony, I mean, there is it really at any drag race, and Kevin, you're a racer yourself, you understand this, that the surface does evolve over a course of a race. You know, when I was going down to Donna Long's races every year, and you know, Wednesday would always just be, well, no one's ever going to get down this racetrack, and everybody go out there and smoke the tires, and then by Friday afternoon, Friday night, we're setting world records. So, you know, you see it yourself, whether it's an NMRA, NMCA race, there is an evolution to that surface over the course of an event.
Yeah, of course, and not to belabor the point on weather, but, you know, if you remember when we were in Gainesville, we had people saying, you know, why NHRA put the Phoenix race in April? It's going to be 100 degrees. It's going to be miserable. And now you look at the forecast for the rest of this week. That's not the case at all. It appears that it's actually going to be pretty comfortable. So that's, you know, obviously yeah. one point in our favor. And, yeah, to your point about the track surface, yes, it changes, and you look at, you know, the good crew chiefs are always going to find a way to capitalize on a variable like that. You know, it just has to be, I guess at some point you just need to park your ego and not have the go-for-the-throat mentality on every run, and just, you know, as they often say, take what the track gives you.
Yeah, and look, and Daniel Wilkerson kind of proved that point. He joked on the starting line with Joe Costello that, you know, his dad was calling himself a chicken, but, you know, they went 4-0-1 in that first session and came out leading the field. So, you know, as we all discussed at this point, there is an approach to kind of take what's available, and everybody is always going to try to toe that line for sure. But, trying to go 370, 380 on a 4-0 track is going to get you nowhere in a hurry. I want to start with Pro Stock. And speaking about going nowhere in a hurry, Kevin, I want to start with you. I am putting the competition in that frame against Erica at this point. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's Gage Herrera looking right now, but after 1 3/4 races, it's almost Gage Herrera looking right now.
Yeah, I mean, we've only had a very small sampling. But, you know, you look at last year where that team got off to such a slow start as opposed to 2022 where they won 10 races.
Yeah,
this appears to be more like 2022. And you know, interesting, there's a couple rounds, certainly at Gainesville there was one round she was vulnerable.
Yeah.
But you know, they did what good teams do, which is find a way to win, even when, you know, things aren't going exactly your way. And you know, again, we've only run what, you know, six seven rounds, but it just, you kind of get that feeling of impending doom, you know. I see she's got, you know, Erica has a 49 point lead, which, you know, obviously could go away in one weekend, but it's hard to imagine that's going to happen. I think it's going to be a fight. You know, I do think you know, you'll see a variety of winners this year. I think, you know, the KB Titan cars, you know, I think Greg Anderson will get his share. Dallas Glenn will get his share. We haven't seen the best of some of the elite cars. You know, you look at Troy Jr. has struggled. You know, I don't think he's even in the top 10. But, you know, they'll get their share, but will it be enough to overcome the advantage of Erica's car right now? It's looking like that's going to be a tall order.
And look, you know, Tony, Kevin brings up Greg Anderson, and you couldn't help but look at the disparity of performance coming into that round against Erica. You're like, this guy's got her covered by more than he has had her covered since she was a rookie. Then he goes up there and pulls like a 006 light and still ends up on the wrong side of it. And those are the moments when I look around and go, uh-oh, for everybody else.
I like what Greg has done for the first two races of the year. I mean, this guy has gotten up for that race.
Yeah.
He's done exactly... He understands the formula. He's done it long enough. There were a few times last year that he came up short. But so early in the year, whatever Greg did in the off season, if it was just drowning himself in work, you know, we've talked and heard the rumblings of one of the reasons that they may be at a slight performance disadvantage. And it's not a lot. I mean, they seem to be clicking. Dallas's car's running good. Of course, Greg, you know, he's been able to serve it up. But what he's done on the starting line and what he's been able to combine that with in terms of performance, it's, you know, I don't think it's discouraging. It seems like it could be to other drivers. But for Greg, that has to be very encouraging that they were on the losing end of both those races in the semifinals against Erica, but you did exactly what you're going to have to do to beat her in the long run. And, you know, the other drivers should really take notice. You know, Matt Hartford, and I like these guys. You know, Matt he's a heck of a tuner, and the chemistry and the relationship that he has with his crew chief is a very good balance, because if you know Eddie, he's a clutch specialist. He's very slick when it comes to the chassis setup and Matt, how he sets the car up. But, you know, we've talked about this before. At what point is he going to learn you cannot hang up another driver? It just seems to work against him. I think it's a small adjustment that a driver can make. But again, I don't think Matt is really in a groove. I think there's a few other drivers that can compete with Erica. But try it, you know, this is for the pro stock class. And I've always said this about any driver that flashes, you know, they have a good reaction time here or there. That's nothing. We're just talking about a silly old reaction time. Do it all the time. Yeah. Do it consistently. Do it year over year and have some staying power. And that's what they're going to have to deal with. So for Greg Anderson, you know, he's in a nice little groove. You got to find a way to maintain that, because some days you just wake up as a driver. Some days you feel good. Some days you just don't feel it. And it's when you're not feeling it that you got to dig in. You got to find something. And if you've done it for a long time, and if you have the wherewithal and the talent to do it, you're going to find it. And I think that's the only thing that's going to beat Erica, because the car, they're able to dial it up. If you go back to Pomona, you look at her first round opponent, it was one of the Quadras. They're just not consistent. That's a team car. They didn't run that good. They didn't have to run that good. In the second round, was it Brandon?
Yes.
You know, he's had a tough time getting off the starting line. That's not a big threat. But for them to be able to pick up 600ths of a second in performance to get up for the challenge, that was their go-to setup. And, you know, I agree with Kevin. I think it's going to be like that all year. So it's all going to fall on everyone else's shoulders in pro stock. But I think right now, once the KB cars get back on track, I think that Greg and Dallas are going to be tougher than ever.
Has there been, or Kevin, is there a risk in this kind of nuclear arms race between these two teams? And, you know, back in the, growing up in the 80s, you know, it was always like, you know, they'd like publish the number of warheads each country had in the newspaper like every month, right? You always wanted to have more than the other guy. Is there an issue or a problem, and I don't know if it exists right now, but foreseeably, with this kind of two superpower situation we have right now in the class?
Well, I mean, we could all agree that probably the best thing that could happen for Pro Stock is for, say, the McGahey team to, you know, I mean, it seems like they made improvements this year, but to see them take the next step where you could get either of those cars qualifying in the top eight, that would provide a really nice balance. You know, again, I don't mind the two-team approach, as long as they're honorable about it. And, you know, as long as you're giving every driver who is your, you know, your hired driver or your customer, whoever, as long as you're giving them a fair shot to win, you know, to me, the more the merrier. And you look, you know, I mean, honestly, Aaron Stanfield should have beaten Erica in the second round.
Yeah.
I mean, he had her just, I don't know what it was, maybe 5,000ths or something. You know, that's pro stock. And It is kind of interesting that you look at Gainesville was one of the tightest fields we've ever had, you know, not even 500ths top to bottom.
Yep.
And, you know, you get the old cliche of, well, anyone who qualifies can win, which is true, but then at the end, you still get the same results, which is Erica running the table. So, you know, and I don't know whether that's just fate. I mean, obviously, you know, that team, they do a great job with the car. She does a solid job driving. So they're going to get that result. But honestly, if you continue to have fields all year long that are 500ths or less, you're going to get some winners from the bottom side. It's inevitable.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And yeah, the grouping is one of those things that I, you know, always pay attention to. And yeah, guys, you know, we've had this discussion 100 times, but oh, back in 2006, we had 36 of these things there. And yeah, and the spread was over a tenth of a second. Like, it was not compelling whatsoever. So yeah, and that grouping to me is always the sign of class health. If the grouping is, like we're talking about here, 500s, 600s, somewhere in that neighborhood, you're talking about a class that is about as evenly squared up as you can possibly get. On the Nitro Funny Car side, Tony, what have we learned, if anything, at this point? Have we learned that the Hagen team's kind of resilient? Because they didn't look so great at Gainesville, but they certainly look damn good in Pomona.
There's just some races that they don't look that great, and they just managed to come out on top. And, you know, I'll go back to the statement I made on the tuners and how they set the car up. There's two ways to approach it. There seems to be two ways that some of these teams are approaching it. Race the car, be smart about it, get the car down the track. Everybody talks about that, but they don't always necessarily execute. Tasca's car, it's either all or nothing. I think that there seems to be a two car race at the top, and that's with the Proc car and that's with Tasca's car. Now, what we saw in Gainesville was all or nothing. I mean, those two cars shook on a couple of occasions, but that track was so tight, and these are some of the challenges that come with the first race of the year. The fact that the track was really good, stuck the tire. How much power do we give it? How much do we take away? You pull it back, sticks the tire, doesn't have the wheel speed, shakes the car. We saw that a few times, and then we saw the complete 180 degrees where some of the cars blew the tires off at the starting line. So I think when Tasca's car settles down, they're going to do a repeat of what they did last year, as is Austin Proc. I think those two cars seem to be the quickest when the conditions are right and when they hit the setup just right. But then there's Hagen and there's Katz. There's a couple of tuners that I think they can run with them. I think they realize and they know they can run with those two cars. But I think that they're smart enough to realize we don't have to. The end result is winning the race, getting to the finish line first, racking up some points. And I'm not saying that they're being smarter, but I think they're being a little bit smarter when it comes to approaching their philosophy on how to execute, what the strategy is going in on Sunday. And, you know, I think the outcome would have been so much different if they could have had three runs in Pomona, even given the Friday, you know, conditions. I think a lot of the teams could have adapted better, but I don't think it's going to be that often that we see Austin Proc and Tasca bounce in the first round. We could have easily seen it in Gainesville from both of them. But, you know, again, I think when they settle down, when they find their sweet spot, and it's mostly just due to some of the changes, big or small, that both of those teams made in the off season that tend to make the car respond a little bit differently. But it's four cars. I mean, it's the same four cars that we talked about last year. I think Caps is going to be and has really asserted himself back into the mix. And right now, well, who's going to fill that fifth spot in? It seems to be Force on one weekend. It seems to be JR on another weekend. I think it's going to take about five or six races to figure out who's that fifth driver that's going to come out from behind that curtain.
I'm not accusing him of this, Tony, but is it possible, in your experience, is it possible for a team to get kind of a mindset where they have maybe fallen in love with the scoreboard on the Tasca side of it? And again, I'm not accusing them of it, but is there a more heavy weight mentally on those guys at this moment to produce a number than there is to produce a race win? Or am I totally in left field with that?
No, you're 100% right. I mean, look, if we're talking about Tasca, when they produce that 340 mile per hour run, I think they're going to say, okay, now let's go on to the next one. I think they recognize an opportunity with some of the tracks and some of the conditions. They're not going to see that. They're not going to see that in the summer, maybe right on a Friday night. If they have a setup run. So, you know, all the stars really have to align, and you can't hardly blame them. I mean, that's a magical number that's going to stick forever at an NHRA event. And, you know, when we saw 337, 338 at Gainesville, I think that really answered any of the questions. So that now it becomes when and where are they going to do it for the first time. And I think once they get that past themselves, then I think they can really hone in. And I'm not saying that's their complete focus. I mean, these guys are competitive. They want to win races.
Yeah.
But, you know, that car seems to be running about 4-5 mile an hour faster than everybody else. So why not? Why not go for that so you can etch yourself in the record books and be, you know, be mentioned in that same conversation with Kenny Bernstein?
Absolutely. And, you know, Kevin, Tony mentioned Austin Prock, and, you know, this guy has looked probably every bit as good as I would have hoped he would have looked, and maybe even better.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if he shouldn't have been in a funny car.
Right.
Well, that really seems to suit his driving style even better than the Top Fuel car. I don't think there's anyone out there that doesn't think he won't win races this year, probably sooner rather than later. And it would certainly be shocking if, when we get to the countdown, that is a car that's not right in the mix. But, you know, back to funny car in general, but really this applies to all the classes. I think you also have to look at what you've had this year where, you know, a lot of teams, I think, plan to test in Gainesville on Wednesday.
Yeah.
That didn't happen because of weather. We lost qualifying run in Gainesville because of weather. We lost qualifying runs in Pomona because of weather. So I think you've got some teams that are behind the eight ball because they had planned to do some testing and, you know, obviously make some runs in qualifying that haven't had the opportunity to do that. So I really think the random sampling you have right now, especially where it applies to someone like Ron Capps, Daniel Wilkerson, people like that, you're not seeing the full picture yet. It's probably going to take another 2-3 races for that to sort of sort itself all out.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just one more touch on Austin Prock. And, you know, we really haven't seen any teething problems yet. And, you know, maybe this is more suited to Tony, the driver, but would there be things that 5-6 races in become a little bit more front of mind for him that can get in the way of what he's been doing so far? Or is this what we should expect consistently from every race from here on out in terms of what his performance has been, not just at the starting line, but in terms of car control and otherwise?
If you're asking me, Brian, the pattern that we're going to see, the trend that we're going to see with Austin as a driver, that car won the Phoenix race last year. That car was in the winner's circle. It's going to continue to do that. It's going to continue to set low ET or challenge for it. The only thing that we should expect is by the middle part of the season and in the second half of the season, we should anticipate a better driver. We saw some inexperience rear its head, qualifying. It was in the, if I'm not mistaken, the Too Fast, Too Tasted.
Yeah.
The driver got out of the car, acknowledged it. That is a trait of a winner, of a driver that understands what is going on and what he did right, what he did wrong. And I think there's going to continue to be some tests for Austin. He really, if you look back at how he got to the final, he didn't race one of the big three. He didn't race Tasca. He didn't race Hagen.
Yeah.
He didn't race Paps. Until you race, he did in the first round at Pomona, but, you know, the car came up a little bit short. But there are going to be times, races, and moments where he's going to have to compete against one of those drivers or somebody else that's got a hot hand, maybe a J.R. Todd. There's a couple other drivers that just don't have the etiquette, don't have that common courtesy, that gentleman's agreement, you know, the little sip of the grape juice and cheese at the end of the test. He stays on this guy. They're going to flick his lights. They're going to knock the top. They're going to get up in this guy's head. They're going to make him think about it. On Saturday, if he looks at the ladder, and that hasn't really happened yet,
yeah.
And that really is going to be the test. I'm sure at some point he's going to do fine. There is talent there that cannot be denied.
Yep.
But those are some of the hurdles. Those are the obstacles. That is what you have in the funny car class that you didn't have and you don't have in Top Fuel. You have some guys that, if you're going to meet them in a backyard, a back alley, you're going to pull some hair. It's not like, don't mess up my face. No, they want to mess your face up. And I'm just saying that metaphorically because in funny car, it's just a different animal. And I think that awaits Austin Prock. And, you know, it's early in the season. And I think that it's going to be interesting when we see some of those matchups, you know, as things really start to heat up.
You know, we talk about being early in the season. We move to Top Fuel, and you know, Tony Stewart is still in a little bit of a honeymoon period here in terms of, you know, first two starts. Goes out first round both times, has had a very solid performance starting line-wise, but the car smoked the tires twice. And, you know, Kevin, this was a subject that the team freely admitted last year, even on Leah's car, that, like, failing to make good use of the early qualifying runs would leave them more often than they wanted to on a back foot for Sunday morning. And I don't think it can be denied that that's what's happened to them twice. I think if there's any team in Top Fuel that has hurt for lack of four qualifying sessions in these two races, it's that one.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I don't think that's relative to Tony's experience in a Top Fuel car.
No.
You know, we know he made dozens of runs in testing. I mean, to my knowledge, none of them have you know, showed any real glaring weaknesses. In fact, I think it's the opposite.
Yeah.
I think the guy is going to adapt to this quickly. I think probably the bigger issue there is, you know, you've got a driver who just inevitably weighs, you know, I don't even want to guess the number, you know, how much more Tony weighs than Leah. So the team has to make that adjustment. Again, you know, the lack of testing, the lack of qualifying runs probably has set them back in that point. But I would think here, you know, weather permitting, you're going to see that car start to run the 360s that everybody else runs, you know, when the conditions are there. And obviously, he can drive the daylights out of the starting line. He's going to hurt some feelings there. And as long as the car goes to the finish line, they're going to get their share of wins. And by that, I mean race wins. It would shock me if, you know, I would pencil him in for at least two or three wins this year. I just think it's inevitable.
What do you think, Tony?
We know this much about that team. You have the Torrance car. You have Coletta. Last year we saw Mike Salinas' car flash. I don't know that we'll see that kind of performance with that car again yet. But there are, you know, Clay, there's a couple of cars that have the potential to run that in that when the conditions are right, 365, 366. When you get into that range, you have now entered an elite group. Now Sean Langdon, it seems like that car is running like Doug's car. So there's only a handful of cars that can compete in that range. And in the first round, when the conditions are cooler, before it warms up to the second round, maybe in that final round, there's only a handful of cars that can compete in that range. We know this. That car can compete in that range. How long it will take them is really the question. You know, the talent, and I think Tony Stewart has, not because of anything that he has done in the past, not because of all those championships and what he's done in almost every type of car that he's been in, but I think with two races in, I think he has earned a spot as a very competitive, you know, elite. I think so. In a short amount of time, and when I use that word elite, I would say that, okay, you have you have a car that's either tuned by David Grubnick or Alan Johnson. And there are only a handful of drivers that you can put in that seat that are consistently going to win races with an elite driver. You take an average guy, now you've just taken that elite car and you've made it a good car. You get an even worse driver, and they are out there, you know, with all due respect.
It's like the X-Files.
Yeah, you know, it's like, what are these guys doing? Some of them are running businesses. Some are walking around holding hands, and some of them are playing golf. I don't know what they do, but I know this. What we see on the track, and those numbers do not lie. So I think that Tony Stewart is knocking on the door of being an elite driver, and he's already earned the respect of all his competitors, because you and I, we see it all the time. We see it in pro stock. We see it in funny car. You either put on display a level of talent or you don't. And there are some drivers that can acquire it, but I think almost anyone would recognize talent right away. And then Tony Stewart showed us that last year. He put that on display when he was testing the car. And again, I'm not saying that because of anything he's done in the past. You put a mask on, a wrestling mask on him, and you give him a nickname, and you put him in a car, and get them to go five times, six times, 10 times down the track. And without saying his name, you're going to say that guy right there has talent.
Yep.
And you know, I think that is likely the consensus of everyone. And I think it's just going to take a few more races for those guys to get it. We might see it in Phoenix, but that car, once it can get some of that performance back and get the car dialed in, and, you know, Kevin, you're 100% right. And maybe they changed a few things. Everyone at this stage of the game is playing with clutch discs to figure out what they want to burn right now, what they can afford in terms of performance to use now versus what they want to stash for later in the year when the countdown comes along. Some of those tuners are shuffling with clutch discs, but they'll get them to work. And I think in a short amount of time, Tony's going to be he's going to be right up there where we could expect him.
Yeah, it was a singular moment, but it's to your point, Tony, it was a singular moment that demonstrated pretty much everything we thought we knew and what we already have learned about the guy. But, you know, first round in Pomona, he loses the race to Justin Ashley, but gets out ahead of him to leave with his ridiculous light. And again, you don't put anything on one moment, but it's almost like being a clutch hitter in baseball. It's like that guy showed us that in that moment, the ball landed on the warning track. He didn't hit out of the park, but he made real solid contact in a very high kind of pressure, big stage moment for him. First pair of the race, first start in top fuel, and he does the job very, very admirably. So I am wondering, and maybe it's just a function of the guy's maturity, but I am wondering if this sustains itself for like five or six races, how much less chummy he might be at the top end. Because so far, we've seen a guy that's been real chummy. I mean, and I don't blame him for it, but I'm wondering at some point, and we're very early on, so I'm not suspecting this kicks in this week or anything, but you know as well as I do, Kevin, that this guy has a competitive streak that's 9 miles wide.
Oh, it's inevitable, and you know, as Tony kind of alluded to earlier, the first time someone goes in, double bumps him or does something, you know, to throw him off, that's probably when you'll see the Tony that, you know, NASCAR fans are very familiar with.
Right. So, you know, when we look at the top fuel field, go ahead.
No, you know, and you know, we're all going to be better for it when that day happens. That you know, you see a little bit of raw emotion down there, where, you know, I mean, it's kind of interesting. You know, would you like to see him win one of the next few races? Sure, I think it would be great for the sport. But at the same time, if there's a little frustration there before it finally happens, and you do see the boiling point, well, that might not be the worst thing either. So. You know, I think we're probably in a good spot either way.
Yeah, and look, to continue my 80s references, we're kind of in the Tony Stewart as Bill Bixby moment right now. And at some point, his eyeballs are going to turn green and his clothes are going to start to rip, and we're going to start to see the, you know, you won't like me when I'm angry side of this guy, which I think, we're all kind of waiting for that to happen in its own natural progression. With Mike Salinas being out of the seat, and for the medical reasons that have brought him to this point, Jasmine comes in, you know, obviously a frustration for her not having a throttle pedal to stage in the first round of her first race in Pomona, Tony. This does change the complexion of the class to a degree, and I'm not insulting Jasmine. I'm taking nothing away, but this is a pure rookie that is getting in a car that conceivably championship level with an experienced competitor in it, in my estimation.
I think the reason how that is going to affect her on-track performance, this is a driver that is learning, and I think she would agree with this approach 100%. Her team is taking a different approach. They're not going to arm that car up. You can tell in the burnout. You can easily tell within the first couple hundred feet that car just is not armed up. It doesn't have all the clutch application that a competitive car would have, and they're doing that intentionally. That's the smart way to approach it. At least that's what we saw in Pomona. And you know, I think that one thing that we should factor in is we may temporarily, or at least at this stage, be losing a good car that was very competitive. But you know, we're losing one. Enter the mix, Sean Langdon. So yeah. And Clay, I mean, Clay's hit or miss. You know, there was a lot of damage that we saw. Hopefully they're recovering, rebounding, you know, you can get parts, but the question for them is, well, they got to figure out what's wrong with that car, because you cannot sustain running a car to where it's knocking that supercharger off. That supercharger, if you buy it brand new, that's a $25,000 item. A carbon injector, that's easily $5,000-$6,000, and then you have to dress it up with accessories. But to get back to Jasmine, I think she's going to surprise a few. I think she's doing great. She does a heck of an interview. The presentation is very good. She articulates well. She has a great personality. She's very marketable. She seems to be a humble, and that is the right approach that you have to take. And I'm sure that she's you know, consulting with a lot of drivers, you know, her dad. And I'm sure that, you know, it seems that if it's Justin Ashley or if it's Antoine Brown, you're surrounded by a lot of talent, and they want to see you succeed. They want to see you do well until you beat them a few times.
Right.
So I think she's doing fine. I think it's great to see her out on the racetrack. It's great news that her, you know, that Mike is recovering. And, you know, we know that that's a very close-knit family. But when I see them, it reminds me of my daughter. It's a great time for her, because there is never an experience like learning. It's nerve-wracking for her.
Yeah.
And it moves pretty fast. But if she's able to focus, I think she'll do fine. You have to remember, like Tony Stewart, she competed. She won some races in the injected car. She's making the step up. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if that car qualifies somewhere in the middle of the pack in Phoenix, given three qualifying runs.
There is one guy, Kevin, coming into Phoenix who has gotten exactly what he's wanted in the offseason, and he got it maybe even sooner than he thought he would, and that guy's Tony Schumacher. And what he got is a final round against a car, not a driver necessarily, but as against a car that he has nothing but ill intentions for. He said it very plainly on this podcast over the offseason, you know, when the whole Skag thing changed and they went over to Ashley's car. He said that his mission in life was to go out and beat that car, beat the brakes off it as often and as early as he could. Well, congratulations, pal, because you got it. What is your estimation on this final round that we're going to see happen in Phoenix? What does he bring to the table, and what is he going to have to do to get around to Ashley?
You know, I think he said it too politely, at least his interviews from Pomona. He sort of tiptoed around it. I would have much preferred he just came out and said, you know what, if I win one more round the rest of my life.
Right.
You know, that I would love, you know, maybe that's not his nature. Maybe that's not his true feelings, although I suspect otherwise. But, yeah, I would love to see that sort of discourse among drivers. But yeah, I mean, that car, you know, you were just talking about, you know, cars that seem better. You know, Langdon has obviously taken a big step this year. I think the Schumacher car, again, small random sampling, but definitely a better start than last year. And I think you can kind of go down the list. You know, you've got Billy Torrence this year. You didn't have much of him last year. So, you know, that makes the road a little tougher for the Tony Stewarts and the Jasmine Venuses of the world, where, you know, instead of having 8 or 10 cars to step over, now you've got 10 to 12 good ones. But anyway, not to stray too far off topic, if there's one race from Phoenix that I'm looking forward to seeing, it's that one. And I hope there's fireworks, whether it's on the starting line or in the shutdown area. I'd love to see it. You know, boys have at it.
Yeah, and Tony, I think this translates even deeper into the ranks than even Schumacher, because, you know, he maintained his entire team over the offseason. I think every single one of those guys wants a piece of that other car.
You can appreciate one thing about Tony Schumacher and Tony Stewart, for that matter. They take the filter off, and they give us what we'd really like to see from every driver. We just want to hear what you really think. We don't want to hear the hyperbole, the watered down version. I'm not knocking the drivers. I mean, they can say and do what they want, but, you know, guys, we're trying to make interesting TV here. And I know for a fact that there's a competitive bone in some of these drivers, but they just opt because they're conditioned. They're conditioned. They've seen it. They think that's the right formula. It's not the right formula. Tony Schumacher has the right formula. Say what you think. He's very strategic. He thinks about what he's going to say. But when he says it, he's 100% right. There was some goings on with that team and that transaction, and it doesn't leave a good taste in your mouth. And it kind of made him a little bit bitter as a professional. He was very professional about it.
Yep.
And look, he wants to beat the pants off of that car. No, nothing against Justin Ashton. He's got driving it, but that guy might have to pay the price too. So,
It's the old adage, if you're going to fight one of us, you get the whole trailer park, right? I mean, that's the...
Yeah. I don't want to hurt you, but you're going to get hurt because you're driving that car.
Right.
But the end result is, I mean, and I think it's a classic final. And, you know, for some reason, as good as Justin Ashley has been, when he's performed well, you know, Tony Schumacher, he understands, like Greg Anderson, sometimes it's hard to beat that experience, like John Force. They may not have it all the time, but they have it when it matters. And that you can count on with Schumacher. And if he's at a slight performance deficit, and he may be, that team has improved. It's gotten better. And I think that they are now a threat in Top Fuel. I just think it's going to be such a classic final. And that's going to take place on Saturday, last qualifying session, correct?
It is. And I think maybe all three of us agree. Maybe you guys don't. You can give your opinion. But, I mean, we need Tony Schumacher to be a relevant name in this sport, not just to be out there driving, but we need Tony Schumacher to be a relevant competitive name. The guy still, because of his longevity and because of his success in years past, still brings with him a massive fan base.
It's the mark of a champion. It's the trait of a winner when, and some drivers are probably so reliant on the car, and the car has made them look good. The car is like, it made him a champion.
Yeah.
But a driver like Tony Schumacher, and I agree, I think we need him for a lot of reasons, not just because he's such a decorated Top Fuel champion. You go back in the history, the Army, and a lot of those great moments, a lot of those great races, most of them that were worked for him, a couple that worked against him, but that is what has made this guy the man he is today. And we need him because he does a good interview, and he'll tell us what happened during the run. He's a true professional. Anytime we can see him line up against the Steve Torrence when Tony's car's running good, if we can see him and Tony Stewart, we can see him and Justin, him and Doug Coletta. It's like, this is the superstar of the sport. And to call yourself to have somebody call you a superstar of the sport, I don't use that, just throw that term around just because it sounds good. You have to earn that. And when you're in the game for 10, 15, 20 years, and you've won that many times, you've been through the crashes, you've been at the highest highs and the lowest lows, and you come out and dust yourself off, and when you dust yourself off, you see all these championships, I'm going to give that guy respect. And that guy plays the part, he talks the talk, he walks the walk, and there's only a few drivers in Top Fuel that are doing that right now. I think it's in some of the other ones. We just want to hear it. But with Tony Schumacher, we get it.
Very last question for both of you. I'll start with Kevin. Have we established at all a front runner of any type in Top Fuel?
No, absolutely not. Too small a sampling and too many good cars out there. You know, for all the reasons we've just outlined in the last hour.
Yeah.
You know, the issues with Clay Milliken's car, the issues with Tony Stewart, and Doug Coletta is currently seventh. I don't think he's going to finish seventh. I don't think there's any way in the world that happens. Given the talent top to bottom, could we see 9 or 10 different winners this year? Absolutely. I would almost bank on it. It's going to be really interesting. And then, you know, after Phoenix, you've got a pair of four wide races coming up, and that throws an entirely different dynamic into it. You're not really sure what you're going to get there. I don't think we've seen anything close to a front runner emerge yet.
Tony, take us home.
Well, I agree. And I think we know when you go to a steakhouse, you got the filet, you got the bone-in ribeye, you got the T-bone. We know we've got Doug. We know we got Torrence. And after that, You know, it's like, okay, who's the chicken? Who's the fish? Where's the halibut? Who right. wants to enter this mix? And I agree with Kevin. It's like there's eight more. There's eight more that could fit that bill, that can put their name in the hat, that can put their, not just their foot in the door, they can put their foot somewhere else, but I it's just a question of who is that going to be. Sean Langdon looks really strong. You know, Antron is a talent behind the wheel. He just, contrary to what he says and how he says it, he's just a positive thinker. He's always upbeat, and that's okay. But what we're losing in the mix is that car just doesn't have the punch. Yep. And it seems that when they try to push, it you know, it smokes the tires. And that is a common thing when the car isn't responding the way that you want. Car has to get up and get going early. It has to 60 foot in a very specific range to be able to run a 367, 368 when the conditions are good. They've done it before, but they just haven't do it on the occasion that they would like, that we would expect. You know, Brittany Force is a driver that, you know, that car is just a click or two away, a kiss away from being what it once was.
Yeah.
That could really change the dynamic. So we really know. We know what we could order when we walk into the steakhouse. But what are the side orders? Who else is going to enter the mix? Could it be Tony? Is it going to be Clay? On one weekend, yes, if they can put a string of three out of four runs together. So I just think Top Fuel has now become one of the most interesting categories. It has, you have what we see in pro stock with, you know, better than 11,000 horsepower. So I think it's the premier class. Not to take anything away from Funny Car, because they're still animals, and, you know, a lot of drivers that are in a Top Fuel car, they're in a Top Fuel car because they don't want to be in a Funny Car. That's dangerous. But I just think in terms of entertainment, there's plenty to talk about in the class.
Well, gentlemen, thank you as always for your time and insight. Look forward to seeing what shakes out for us in Phoenix. We have like a million television shows. We're doing a Friday night show. We're doing a Saturday qualifying show. We're doing a Saturday Pomona race show, doing a Sunday race show. Our Insider Live will be shot on Saturday morning, so all of us will have our hands full. Thank you, guys.
See you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
We will be right back with some final thoughts on this episode of the NHRA Insider, powered by Speedmaster, right after this. And back here on the NHRA Insider, powered by Speedmaster. Remember, Speedmaster is the home of high performance. You can check out their parts, whether you go to Speedmaster79.com or you check them out at major vendors, Summit, Jegs. They're partners with virtually every big speed parts distribution house, not only in the United States, but also across the world. They're down in Australia. They have access and ability to get you the parts you need for the project you are putting together. Racing season's kicking off. You want to get the car done. You want to get it finished. You want to keep it under budget and use good parts. Speedmaster has you handled from mild to absolutely wild. Whether you want billet cylinder heads for your Top Fuel car, or whether you want just a set of replacement pistons, maybe a set of high compression pistons for your small block that you're building to go cruise around the neighborhood and rattle the windows, Speedmaster has what you want. Check them out online at Speedmaster79.com or, as I said, cruise your favorite parts houses where you do your ordering for all the rest of your hot rod parts. They will be carrying the Speedmaster brand. So that brings us to the end of this episode, and I do want to reiterate a couple of things about Phoenix. We have a show on Friday evening. We have two shows on Saturday, a qualifying show and a special 30-minute elimination final round show where we close out Pomona. We're going to be crowning our Winter Nationals champions in Phoenix. And then, of course, on Sunday, we have our race broadcast as well. All of this will be going on, as well as the NHRA Insider Live podcast. Tony and I, of course, host that live in the pits of every race. It is streamed on NHRA's YouTube, as well as all of NHRA's AVOD and or FAST channels. What that means is you can watch us on Tubi, you can watch us on Plex, you can watch us on the Samsung app, you can watch us really across platforms. So if you follow the NHRA channels over the course of your week when you're just cruising on TV or your device, you can watch us live on Saturday mornings at every national event this year, and that's going to be happening in Phoenix this weekend. Stay tuned to NHRA.com for more info there. Phoenix is going to be great. It's going to be wild. It's going to be hairy. It's going to be fast. Full fields in every professional category. 18 Nitro Funny Cars trying to qualify. 21 Pro Modified cars on the ground. The Congruity HR Pro Modified Series presented by the fine people at Learn EV Plus this weekend, powered by the folks at Total Seal Piston Rings. It is going to be absolutely great. All of it up for grabs, all of it wide open, and all of it part of the NHRA Mission Foods Drag Racing Series. I'm Brian Lones. Thanks as always for watching The Insider, listening to The Insider, or coming to see us live on the NHRA stage on Saturday morning in Phoenix. Be well. We'll be back next week to recap Phoenix and look ahead to the 2-4 wide races. Some people love them. Some people don't love them. Once again, I'm Brian Lones. Thanks for watching.